Wow.
What's up?
I just bought and financed a car through Carvana in minutes.
You? The person who agonized 4 weeks over whether to paint your walls eggshell or off-white bought and financed a car in minutes?
They made it easy. Transparent terms, customizable down and monthly. Didn't even have to do any paperwork.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Hey, have you checked out that spreadsheet I sent you for our dinner options?
Finance your car with Carvana and experience total control. Financing subject to credit approval.
From KMOX Sports.
Come on, let's get going now.
Welcome to the Graybar Sports Open Line.
Wynn swings and he drives that to left field. Back to the track and gone!
Graybar, your distributor for electrical and datacom needs.
We're primed and ready.
All day, baby.
Man, let's go.
Now, Matt Pauley and the Graybar Sports Open Line on KMOX.
It is the Graybar Sports Open Line. Last one for 2024. Joe Pott in for Matt Pauley again tonight. Matt will be back. I think he's back on Thursday, right? I think that's what it is. It'll be Thursday night, but you've got me for one more night, and I'm glad to be here. Glad that you are here. Kyle Sixt is here. We'll finish out strong. We've got a lot going on, obviously, sports-wise, and we'll get to talk about a lot of it tonight here on Sports Open Line, and we will welcome your calls. We do have a couple of open segments right now, so be thinking about this. This is the way that I kind of want to go about this, is I would say, and you're welcome to reflect on if there's something specific from 2024, but I think the way I want to do this is let's think about if this were 1 year later, December 31st, 2025, what are we talking about on December 31st, 2025 with regards to St. Louis sports? So that could be what you hope we're talking about, what you think we're talking about, what you expect that we'll be talking about, anything that you think is upcoming in 2025. That's on the table. So be thinking about that. Like I said, we have some open segments, I think. So at least an open segment as it looks as we kind of build things out here. We do have a couple of guests. We'll try our best to get some Blues postgame to you. That's going to depend on how this one finishes. They're just ending the second period. It's 5-1 Blues, by the way. They are just crushing the Blackhawks in the Winter Classic in Wrigley. Maybe that second period isn't quite over yet. It's real close to the end of the second period. I think it is the end of the second period. So if we have the opportunity, the Blues, I will tell you, the Blues are great about getting out some post-game sound. It might be a little bit different with this game being at Wrigley, so we'll see. If we can get you some post-game sound, we will certainly try to do that. Really cool. Cam Fowler, by the way, opened the scoring tonight for the Blues. His 1,000th game in the NHL, and he gets the goal in the Winter Classic. He's actually got two goals tonight now in the Winter Classic. Another goal for Dylan Holloway. He has played really well, but he has played even a step better since Montgomery has taken over. 10 goals in 17 games since Jim Montgomery has taken over as the Blues head coach. So he has really flourished under Montgomery's leadership and his tutelage or whatever. I don't know what it is that has made that combination click, but it already looked like a savvy move to go grab Holloway and then Broberg when Doug Armstrong signed them an offer sheets in the summer. But man, it's looking even better now. And if you caught last night when we talked to Matt DeFranks from STLtoday.com, he said you got to remember too how young Holloway still is. So he is going to be a big part of this team moving forward. And you put him there with Kyrou and with Thomas. You've got a really nice core as you start thinking about where this Blues team has the opportunity to be. That might not necessarily be in 25, and that was part of our conversation. It might be 25, 26, right, that kind of manifests itself because, again, 17 games for Montgomery so far. This is not a lot of his influence as far as players are concerned, so that will come with the next offseason. But he's got a chance to kind of shape what this team is going to be over the next 4 or 5 years. Signed a 5-year contract, so we know that's only as good as, I guess opinions are, because coaches tend to come and go very quick in the NHL, much quicker in the NHL than you see in any other sports. Can you think of any other sport where a coach would lose his job at the beginning of the year and then have a new job within the same league within a couple of weeks, because that's what happened to Jim Montgomery. So that is how quick it happens in the NHL. And I think that it was made clear then that that was who the Blues wanted to go after. That's why they did it. That Doug Armstrong said that's why they did it at this point. And it's paid off, at least to this point. At least it feels like it's paid off. And now we get to see, heading into 2025, what that really looks like as far as the Blues go. They have a really home-heavy schedule in January, and I think we'll know a lot more about what this Blues team is going to look like here in a couple of weeks. So we'll talk to Jeff Jones coming up here in our second segment. This is night number three for me in a row, essentially doing Sports Open Line. We did Friday, did last night, and we haven't had a chance to talk about the Cardinals. Now, the Cardinals have given us nothing to talk about, but we do need to talk about the Cardinals. We do need to look forward kind of at what might be to come for the Cardinals, and we can look back at 2024, and we'll do that with Jeff Jones, who covers the Cardinals for the Belleville News Democrat. He also does some writing for MLB.com, and he's been covering this team for a while, so Jeff will have a great perspective kind of on what's going on, what's to come, all of that. The Billikens got off to a good start in conference play today. They beat up on Fordham, getting a road win, and I was listening to the post game here on Camo X and Bob Ramsey talking to Josh Schertz, and he said, look, a win is fantastic, right? A win in conference, great. But getting that road win in conference is like finding that gold nugget, man. When you can get a road win in conference, that's huge. I mentioned this just the other night, about it might have been last night, that is ultimately what separates teams when you're looking at a conference race that is more than likely going to come down to a few games. It always does in almost every conference. What separates those teams that end up at the top of the conference is going to get a road win, picking up some of those road wins. I think it was when we were talking about Mizzou basketball the other night. We were talking about that because the SEC is going to be so hard. But the A-10 is not going to be easy. No conference is easy. So the Billikens check one off today, getting the win at Fordham. We're going to talk to Stu Durando, who for a long time covered the Bills for STL Today and the St. Louis Post-Dispatch. He's now gone on his own, and he has his own Substack, and he covers the Bills exclusively. So he's going to have some great insight on the Billikens. And I had a chance actually earlier today, so I caught up with Frank Cusimano of Five on Your Side, and we chatted about a number of things. We talked a lot about Mizzou football and the finish to the season, but also what the future looks like for Mizzou football. And we reflected on a couple of things, including the Blues, including the Cardinals. And so we'll have that for you in the 7 o'clock hour. And then I should have some time to take some calls and hear what you think is upcoming in 2025 for St. Louis sports. And like I said, we'll try to get you whatever Blues postgame we can get you. They are in the second intermission right now. It is 5-1 Blues. So we'll take a break here. We'll come back. We'll talk some Cardinals baseball with Jeff Jones. That's on the other side of the break. I'm Joe Pott, in for Matt Pauly here tonight. It's the Graybar Sports Open Line, and this is Camo X. See, we even have some good music here on a New Year's Eve for you. Welcome back in on Camo X. It's the Graybar Sports Open Line. I'm Joe Pott, in for Matt Pauly. And as I mentioned before the break, finally an opportunity to talk a little Cardinals baseball. And granted, they have given us zero to talk about here recently. But we're going to do it anyway, and we're going to do it with Jeff Jones, who covers the Cardinals for the Belleville News Democrat and has covered this team for a while for many different outlets. Happy New Year, Jeff. Thanks for doing this.
Absolutely, Joe. Happy New Year to you, too.
Yeah, look, it's been really, really quiet. And, you know, I think we had an idea that there wasn't going to be a lot going on because there's not going to be a bunch of additions. By this point last year, I think that all of the three pitchers, the big pitching signings that the Cardinals had made, had all been done at this point. I guess we'll just start with the third baseman in the room and talk about Nolan Arenado. Do you foresee any chance that Nolan Arenado is on the opening day roster for the Cardinals?
I guess we can't say no chance, but boy, it's really hard for me to envision it at this point. I think this thing is so far down the road in terms of, I think, it being clear what both sides kind of want out of this, what the Cardinals feel like they need to do for Nolan Gorman in terms of securing playing time for him at third base, and really, frankly, what they want to do in terms of payroll. I think that you know, when we hear from them, they're continuing to want to cut. It says to me that there's really no path forward of us getting figured out. And I do think it will be. You know, I don't know that necessarily it might be in a spot that maybe anybody thought that it would be when this started. But I do have a really hard time imagining Nolan Arenado being on the team on opening day, let alone when camp opens here. But I guess we can't say never until the ink is dry on that.
I'm a little bit surprised that he didn't want to do that. He didn't want to go to Houston, and I know it was a lot more about timing necessarily, or than it was necessarily about the destination. But it seems like the destination is one that would fit Nolan Arenado at this point in his career quite well.
You know what's really interesting to me about that, and I don't know that we'll ever know the answer to it because maybe it's a universe that couldn't exist. But I wonder if the deal with the Astros and Arenado had been agreed to before the Astros sent Kyle Tucker to Chicago, I wonder what his reaction is. Because when you think about the timing of all of that, you know, the Astros obviously now have since pivoted to signing Christian Walker, and they're going to play Isak Paredes at their base. But at the time, making that deal, trading Tucker to the Cubs, could very easily have been a signal that they were willing to kind of, you know, throttle down themselves a little bit. And then so it didn't necessarily shock me, given the timing, that was a place that Nolan might have shied away from. But I do think it's an interesting sort of counterfactual. If the Astros reverse the order of those transactions, what does the winner look like?
We're talking with Jeff Jones of the Belleville News Democrat, talking a little Cardinals baseball here on New Year's Eve. When I was looking at kind of what I have said a lot, that I, you know, for all that folks think and all the hand-wringing, I certainly don't feel like, you know, this is going to be some sort of terrible. I don't feel like this is going to be a 2023. I think this team, even as it's constructed right now, even if you take Nolan Arenado out of there, I think what we are looking at is probably very close to what we saw in 2023. Am I way off the mark?
So I think the issue with this team that's going to crop up, that we saw crop up in that really long and tough 23 season, is that I'm not entirely sure where the innings come from to sort of fill in the gaps here. You know, when you look at the guys that so far they've let leave in free agency, Lynn, Gibson, Andrew Kittredge as well should be somebody that we remember here in terms of a guy who pitched important innings that's off of this roster. You know, it's around about 350, 360 innings that have walked out the door. And can those innings be replaced internally? Maybe, you know, maybe it's possible that you get 150 really strong innings out of Michael McGreevy. And maybe if Kyle Leahy pitches 30 more innings and Chris Roycroft pitches 20 more innings, they look like Kittredge. And, those, you know, they look like guys they're replacing. And maybe Steven Matz is healthy for a whole year. There's a lot of maybe in there, right, that kind of seems like, okay, maybe it could be there. But at the same time, I don't know. To me, that 23 season really went off the rails when you were sort of looking at a team that had a clearly limited Adam Wainwright taking starts. You had Dakota Hudson and Jake Woodford taking starts. That was a lot of innings that really weren't of big league quality in that 23 season, and that's kind of where the bottom fell out. And so I do see the case for optimism, especially offensively and on the position player side, but I would caution folks that until Michael McGreevy shows up to spring, and he is that guy, and Gordon Graceffo either is that guy or maybe is a weapon out of the bullpen, until those things happen, I think it's fair to be a little skeptical of that.
Do you expect Eric Fetty to stick around?
I do. I think that, you know, if the Cardinals find themselves in a spot where they're needing to trade off Eric Fetty this winter, then things have probably gone pretty seriously awry. If for no other reason, then he doesn't really make that much money. I think it's 7.5 next year. And for starter visibility, for a perfectly cromulent number three kind of starter who's going to take the ball and put up predictable results for you, that's a guy who's going to have probably a lot of value at the deadline, that if it's a team that's out of it, that you know, he's going to be a guy you would trade. Or if you're a team that's, you know, surprisingly competitive, if you're last year's Brewers, then you hang on to him and you sort of see, you know, how far it goes. But to me, I think of the two, paradoxically, because he makes a little more, Steven Matz is the guy that's more likely to be moved.
And Sonny Gray, does he stick around as well?
I think so. I think we get the impression from Sonny that what was important to him when he signed the free agent deal last winter was proximity to home and the ability to be around his kids and sort of have an environment that he's comfortable with. And, you know, I think it's, he's told the Cardinals he's comfortable being in a spot where he's going to be kind of a veteran mentor for younger pitchers, if not necessarily on a contender. Now, you know, again, we'll see what that looks like. Does Sonny feel the same way at the deadline? Does it feel the same way next winter? Hard to say, depending on how this year goes, but I would expect him to be here on opening day.
Jeff Jones is with us as we talk a little Cardinals baseball, continuing on kind of what maybe we expect about 2025. The catching position is another one that is intriguing to me, and I was so certain that they were going to try to move Yvonne Herrera at the deadline last year, and maybe they tried. I don't know. I'd never heard that, but I've heard much more about Yvonne Herrera being the guy behind the plate this year when it seemed to me that Pedro Páez was trending at being that guy that they wanted to stay behind the plate. Where do you see that shaking out?
You know, the thing with Herrera is that his bat plays at a level, especially for a catcher, where if you can get him defensively to be, say, just maybe slightly below average to average, if he can be that good of a defender, then the bat is of such a quality that he's a big advantage for you at catcher, because compared to other catchers, he hits really well. But that's also sort of the challenge there, is that that's where you would want that guy. Because if Yvonne Herrera was, for instance, a first baseman or a corner outfielder even, then all of a sudden the bat compared to others to play that spot doesn't necessarily play up in the same way. So he'd be picking up that slack elsewhere. I think that when you look at Páez and Herrera compared to each other last year in terms of what they generated, I think obviously Herrera is a better hitter. Páez, I think, hit better last year than they were counting on. I think it was 7 homers he ended up hitting. You know, was put in some really good, strong, competitive at-bats. I think was better at the plate than maybe they expected. But I think Herrera definitely shows out as a little bit of a better hitter. Páez is maybe a slightly better framer, maybe a little better game caller, a little better at working with the pitchers. Is markedly better at throwing runners out. Neither of them were league average. Even Páez was slightly below average in a lot of those metrics, but Herrera was pretty dismal behind the plate in throwing guys out last year. And so that's going to be something that they're going to have to figure out, because one thing that's also going to be a challenge, again, if you're talking about a young pitching staff, it's a lot to pitch in the big league. It's a lot to sort of manage and keep your eye on. And if the running game is going crazy behind them because the catchers can't limit it, that's not putting those guys in the best possible spot to succeed. So that's going to have to be a point of emphasis based on kind of what we saw last season with those guys and not controlling the run game.
And how do we like Wilson Contreras as a first baseman? How do we think that is going to shake out?
I think it's a really interesting idea just in terms of, you know, if you look at the ways that Wilson has gotten hurt over the last couple of years, they haven't really been, I guess they haven't been what I would call like a wear and tear kind of injury, right? You know, there was no like soft tissue stuff. It's all just sort of been freak accidents, but it's also freak accidents that kind of only happen to catchers.
Catchers, yeah.
Right. So, you know, by moving him out of there, does that turn the bat in even a better direction? Maybe it does. And he was far and away their best hitter last season when he was healthy and on the field. And so if you feel like that's the best way to keep him there, then that's the best way to keep him there. I do think that, again, when we talk about what this team looks like next year compared to last year, we should keep in mind that Paul Goldschmidt, for whatever he did at the plate or didn't do, is an outstanding defensive first baseman. You know, has he slowed down a little as he's aged? A little, yeah. But he's still a top-tier defender at first base. And when you look at what that has to do with the rest of the infield of it, you know, and especially in terms of scooping out throws, we should be prepared for a little bit of that to be a little bit of a challenge as well.
Yes, I remember that being a huge part of when he came to St. Louis on what he was going to do for the infield defense, and I think he did that and more. And for what it's worth, and it's worth nothing, I think he's going to have a great year for the Yankees too. I don't think that last year is as indicative of a great slide for Paul Goldschmidt, but that's just me.
Yeah, I think that's totally fair, you know, especially when you look at the way he kicked up in the second half of the season. Basically, it was kind of the second half of 23 and the first half of 24,
yeah,
where he was really pretty lost. And whether that was something mechanical, whether maybe there was more going on with him physically than he even maybe recognized or wanted to admit, who knows? But if he did seem to find it a decent amount, and frankly, like, the Yankees don't need him to be 2014 Paul Goldschmidt,
yep,
right? If he can be 2023 Paul Goldschmidt, 2019 Paul Goldschmidt, that's more than enough for the Yankees, and he'll do them a great service by doing that.
Totally agree. Speaking of doing a great service, we appreciate the service you have provided us, Jeff Jones, on this New Year's Eve to chat a little Cardinals baseball.
I am thrilled to do it, Joe. Absolutely anytime.
Have a great new year and a great rest of the holiday season. And I know we'll talk to you more as we get closer to spring training and ultimately the 2025 season.
You too, sir. We'll see you in a couple weeks.
Thanks, man. Sounds good. That's Jeff Jones of the Belleville News Democrats. Covered the Cardinals for a long time. Appreciate him stepping in on New Year's Eve. We'll keep it going. We've got Stu Durando talking Billikens basketball. That's coming up next. Joe Pott in for Matt Pauly. It's the Graybar Sports Open Line, and this is Camo X. A very happy New Year as the Graybar Sports Open Line continues here on New Year's Eve. I'm Joe Pott in for Matt Pauly tonight as we wrap up 2024. We could do a little looking ahead to 2025 as well. We will do that. As I mentioned, if you have some thoughts on what to expect, what you think is coming in 2025, get ready for those because I do have some time for some calls. Right now, we'll switch gears, talk some Billikens basketball with Stu Durando, who you have read for a while in STL Today and the St. Louis Post-Dispatch, is now branched out on his own. First of all, Stu, I think it's the first time that we've chatted since you have kind of started the new endeavor. Give me an idea of how that's going and how people can follow along.
Yeah, Joe, thanks. Thanks for having me on. I took a retirement from the Post about 2.5 months ago, and then immediately just kind of jumped into the Substack thing that a lot of writers have been doing. I had no idea about it, but it's been a pretty cool deal. Just kind of create your own space to write, and I've been covering SLU sports there under the name Stu on SLU. Figured it would be something easy to remember, so people can just go to Stu on SLU at Substack or .substack.com, I think it is. And I think today was actually my 100th story in 2.5 months I posted. So I've been pretty busy.
And if that, I think that kind of tells the story right there, because obviously for you, this is a chance to focus on something that you enjoy, something that you have a passion about. But I think for readers and for folks looking for that inside into SLU, this is something that now that's your sole focus. That's what's cool about it.
Yeah, it is. It's just like totally the focus. At the paper it wasn't, which is fine. I like doing a lot of different things, but this just allows me to kind of dig into one area. I cover all the sports there, but with the heavy emphasis on men's basketball at this point. And, you know, I just throw up whatever comes into my head that I think is a story without limitations. So I've been pretty busy with it, but it feels kind of more like a hobby now than a job, and it's been pretty enjoyable.
Really cool. Stu Durando with us here talking a little Billikens basketball tonight as they get their A-10 opener against Fordham, 88-60, the final score earlier this afternoon, and 88-63, sorry. Feels like the SLU team that we have expected and that we've only seen kind of glimpses of in the non-conference season. It felt like they've kind of put it all together today. At least a lot of it clicked.
Yeah, for one day, everything looked kind of like maybe we expected. The offense was really functioning nicely, and I think guys are still getting used to playing with Robbie Avila and just how that worked, but it looked really good today. It helps when you've got Gibson Jimerson. You know, everything he was throwing up was going in the first half, especially. Yeah, he had 26 points in the first half. And they just kind of rode it from there. Defensively, they're getting better. They're not great, but they were definitely much better. They're getting more scrappy, and you can see the progress. You know, it's kind of been a gradual thing. If not for bad free throw shooting, they might have a little bit better record. That really hurt them in a couple of games right before Christmas. But definite progress, and you know, they just have to keep trying to, you know, instead of playing in 5 and 10 minute spurts, you know, put together that full game like they did today.
I heard Josh Schertz on the post game show, and actually, I guess it was Rammer that said it, but they were talking about wins and ultimately road wins. And in conference play, it doesn't matter what conference you're in. That's a huge thing to get. And this is not a terrible Fordham team. They'd won a bunch in a row coming in. They had a pretty good non-conference schedule. So to go on the road to open conference play and get a road win, you feel like, man, you've got a leg up just to start the year.
Yeah, any time you win on the road toward at least, you know, breaking even on the road is a good thing. And there were 7, 8, 10 games today, all pretty much simultaneously, and SLU was the only road team to win on the first day of conference play. So, you know, it's every little bit helps. And, Fordham's not going to be competing for the top of the conference, but, you know, they had been playing well, 5-game win streak, I believe, and they'd been scoring a lot of points. They held them down to 63. So, starting with a road win gives you a leg up moving forward.
We're talking with Stu Durando here, talking some Billikens basketball on this New Year's Eve. Kellen Thames has been an interesting character, an interesting person for this SLU team this year, and I know he's dealt with some injuries, but he's one of those that has kind of shown the flashes. What are you hearing? What can you tell us about Kellen Thames? 10 minutes today, scores 4 points.
Yeah, they didn't know if he was going to play today because he's had a hip injury for about two and a half, three weeks, which is, separate from the issue he has with cramping that has been a real problem. So he was really good at the beginning of the season. He was contributing in a lot of ways. There were no problems. And then he got hit with this, what Church calls full body cramping, and we kind of saw it when he went down at Illinois State on the court and couldn't continue. And it's just really been a problem that they're trying to figure out why it happens and how they can combat it. I think there have been 4 games where he's played in the first half and then just he couldn't go in the second because of he had to go back and, you know, get fluids and things like that. So they're trying to figure that out. And while they're trying to figure that out, he got the hip injury. And that's kept him out of several games. So he was able to play today, came off the bench, didn't do a lot today, but, you know, he did play and had 4 points. And he's just a kind of a different element that they don't otherwise have. So if they can get him semi-healthy and playing, you know, even 20 minutes a game, it's going to be a big addition because Schertz thinks he can be kind of a fourth big scorer for them if he's playing regularly.
Yeah, I knew that he felt that way. And all 5 starters go more than 30 minutes, and that doesn't feel like it's sustainable. If you can get some more minutes off the bench, that's ultimately going to be – I know they're probably not going to play much deeper than what they did at the, I think, 9 today, but 30-plus minutes off the bench for all 5 starters seems like a lot.
Yeah, that's kind of his thing. I know last year he went with he was going with pretty much a 6.5-man rotation in conference at Indiana State, and he thinks the guys are in good enough condition to do it. Jimerson plays more minutes. I mean, he's like in the top 5 or 7 in the country in percentage of minutes played, and overall, I think there's a stat out there. There are not a lot of teams that play less bench minutes than Schertz does. So that's kind of his thing. You know, Thames would obviously be a big minute guy off the bench if he's healthy. And then they've got some other guys developing who are, you know, interesting, like Max Picard, who's really done some things in the last couple of games, who's, you know, a big 6'11 kind of perimeter player who you could see getting minutes moving forward. And you have a kid, Dylan Warlick, who was a redshirt until a few games ago. And because of the injuries, they just decided for him to play. So there's a lot of options off the bench. The question is, how much is he going to use the bench?
As we talk with Stu Durando here about the Billikens, let's talk about the A-10 too. What do you expect out of the Atlantic 10? It's been Dayton, VCU, St. Louis has been up at the top 4, you know, in recent years. What do you look for in this year's Atlantic 10?
Yeah, it's kind of, it seems to me it always has kind of the same kind of feel. You have a general idea of the top who the top 3 or 4 are going to be and maybe who the bottom couple are going to be. And there's this big soft middle or that could just go any number of ways. I think, you know, St. Louis was picked 4th and now I think they're kind of considered in that middle to lower middle part, but you know, they're going to show improvement and we'll see how that goes. But Dayton clearly showed that they were probably the best team in non-conference. St. Bonaventure just kind of always seems to rise a little bit with Coach Mark Schmidt. He's a really good coach, and VCU is going to be good. Last year, a couple of teams like Richmond and Loyola emerged and became two of the better teams in the conference, which wasn't expected. So could that happen this year? Yeah, it could happen. You could have an unexpected or two teams that rise up, and I don't know who they could be. Could it be the Billikens? Maybe, if they continue to show improvement. But I think someone's going to have to take a top couple spots away from Dayton, VCU, St. Bonaventure, and that group.
Rhode Island had a really good non-conference season. Archie had them roll. I think they won their first eight or nine games in a row to start the year. So I don't know. Maybe they could be one as well. I think it will be interesting. And I think it is like a lot of conferences in that you kind of expect there to be, you know, the same, not the same, but you expect those top four and the bottom four. And it's kind of fun to watch what the what those teams in the middle do. And it you know, this is where, as we were talking about, maybe those road wins, they make a difference, right?
Yeah, I mean, that's going to, if you can get, you know, one or two more road wins than the teams around you, and it's going to really raise you, you know, let's put you a little bit higher in the final standings and the seeding for the conference tournament, that kind of thing, even if you're not in the top two or three. You know, it's better to be fifth than seventh. So the road wins, you never take those for granted. Rhode Island, you mentioned, they lost. They were 11-1 before today, and they went somewhere and lost at Duquesne. And Duquesne did not have a very good non-conference. So, it just goes to show. I mean, people thought Fordham was playing well, and they honestly did not look very good today. So teams that look good in non-conference sometimes suddenly aren't so good once conference play starts, and vice versa.
It is true. There is just something different about conference play. Stu, as I said, I really appreciate you coming on tonight here on New Year's Eve. I hope the holidays have been good. Hope you have a great new year and they continue to be good. And folks can follow you, stuonslu.substack. And I would invite you to go check it out and get some real in-depth Slu stuff. Thanks so much, Stu.
Yeah, thank you, Joe. Have a good new year.
Thank you. Appreciate it. Stu Durando with us here talking some Atlantic 10, talking some St. Louis University basketball. Billikens get the A-10 opener today at Fordham. We'll come back. We'll wrap up the 6 o'clock hour here on the Gray Bar Sports Open Line. I'm Joe Pott in for Matt Pauly. We'll take a break. We're coming back after the break on Camo X.
Welcome back to the Gray Bar Sports Open Line. Once again, Matt Pauly on Camo X.
Final segment here in our 7 o'clock hour. Again, we'll have some time. I will have time for some calls in the 7 o'clock hour on the other side of the break. We'll be able to kind of get you into that 7 o'clock hour. We'll visit with Frank Cusimano after our first break, so our second segment of that 7 o'clock hour. And then we've really got the back half of the hour right now where we can take your calls. So, again, I want to know what you think we'd be talking about a year from now. So what do you expect from 2025? Or what do you hope from 2025? What is your best case scenario as we look back, as we sit here on New Year's Eve on 2024? What's your best case scenario as we sit, if we were to sit here again on 2025? So what are you looking forward to? And that really can cover anything. I've mentioned before, and I talked with Kevin Wheeler earlier this afternoon just about, you know, the Cardinals of 2025. And again, I understand the need for pause, as Jeff Jones was kind enough to kind of put that out there, that he's worried maybe about innings as far as the pitching staff is concerned. But when you look at, you've got Gray and Fetty and Michaelis and Pallante, as I would say, pretty solid top four, if provided that Sonny Gray comes back. And he said that he thought that was probably the case. Also, Eric Fetty. I don't know about Steven Matz. I don't think anybody knows about Steven Matz, because you haven't been able to depend on Steven Matz for the last couple of years. And I certainly wouldn't in 2025. But you also have McGreevy, Graceffo. Both of those guys looked good in short sample size in 2024. And you don't have to expect that it will be a full year from either of them, but it could be a full year combined from those two and perhaps a Steven Matz. I just feel like ironically, as you go into a year that is certain, of nothing, that is full of uncertainty, that it feels like the rotation is in pretty good, is in a pretty good spot, more so maybe than it has been over the last couple of years. I guess you were in good shape going into 2024 with Lynn, and also obviously with Kyle Gibson. You at least, and the reason they were brought in was innings. You at least knew that you were likely to get pretty good innings. Now, Lance Lynn had some injury issues, so wasn't as much. Neither of them obviously will be around in 2025. But even in years before that, in really good years for this team, it seems like it was always trying to piece together the rotation. And in two of those years, it was going out and getting multiple pitchers at the deadline to piece together the rotation to try to get to the National League Central title or get to the postseason. That's what it was in 21 and in 22. And then, of course, the disaster that was 23, and then comes last year. So I'm pretty optimistic in the fact that we should have some solid baseball in St. Louis. I'm not fooling myself into thinking that, like, yeah, this is going to be a contender, this is going to be great. No. Again, and I've said this before, you could get to the fact or get to the point where you have a team that might hit 90 wins, right? If a lot of these younger players all sort of hit their peak, or you get a great year from several at a time. But that then relies on Gorman doing a complete 180. It relies on Walker all of a sudden having things click and figuring things out. It relies on probably a McGreevy or a Graceffo or both of them having great years in your rotation. So other than that happening, I think what you're in for is very similar to what you saw in 2024. And I would expect it to be that way for a couple of seasons. I don't think it's going to be a super quick fix. But again, you could get J.J. Weatherholt zooming through your system. You could get a Quinn Matthews who is going to make a big difference coming up on the pitching side of things. And those players are going to make a difference at some point in time. As we talked about, and maybe this was off air, I was chatting with Kevin Wheeler, and he said, and also you're drafting fifth this year. Okay, so there's another opportunity to really improve what is coming behind the current crop. Let's not forget Tink Hintz is down there as well. So you do have that coming through the pipeline. So there's the opportunity. I just think it's going to be a little bit more of a slower build. We need to take a break for the news, so we will do that, get you all of the appropriate news. The Blues still up big. They're up 5-2 with about 7.5 to play in the third period. If we have the opportunity to get you some post-game sound, we will do that in the 7 o'clock hour. And again, ready to take your calls as well. New Year's Eve here on the Graybar Sports Open Line. I'm Joe Pott in for Matt Pauly tonight. We'll take a break for the news. We're coming back for the 7 o'clock hour on Camo X.